The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. And Colin Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
And Ring Rose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ring Rose. Ring Rose is going here. What a score.
You're welcome to the Hard Yards. I'm Andy Nagidi. It's another big week for Irish rugby. Following the Twickenham heroics, we face into another weekend of Champions Cup action and the small matter of Toulon and Saracens coming to town. No biggie. To discuss the week's action, I have Mr. Pat McCarry in studio.
Hey, how's it going?
And a little later on, we'll be speaking with the rugby pod's Jim Hamilton, as well as All Blacks legend Conrad Smith. But first, we are joined on the line by Munster and Ireland fly half, Mr. Ian Keatley. How are you?
Hi, Andy. How's things?
Things are pretty good. Big few weeks for you. How's it been around Ireland camp?
Yeah, it's been great. Obviously, we went down and won the Grand Slam, and it was unbelievable to be over there in Twickenham to experience everything. Obviously, would have loved to play more of a bigger part in it, but I kind of understood what my role was quite early on in the Six Nations. And I kind of knew I would be a backup, but I kind of took that challenge on and kept trying to improve my skills and also tried to prepare the lads fully for the games that are coming up. So kind of doing analysis on the opposition and during the week trying to run all their plays against them and hopefully try to play my part that way.
So were you trying to copy George Ford or Owen Farrell?
We kind of thought that George Ford would have started in the build-up, so I was trying to copy him, trying to do a few like Finn Russell was kind of he's kind of known for the no-look pass, so we were kind of even doing a few of them in training, which is good fun to do.
So the England team's named, suddenly you've to go back to the mirror and say, right, I need to get a bit more ballsy. But seriously, like, does that mean that the training session changes up completely when you have to play another role to copy a different player?
It doesn't. Like, if you start trying to emulate England completely, you'll fall out of structure and the attack won't be good enough for the defending team. So you try and keep it as close to Ireland tack as possible, but we bring in a few strike plays that England would do and try and copy them, and like they use Mario Toje and kind of all their key players on like hit lines. We kind of emphasised a few key attacks key trends that they've done in previous games. So that's what we kind of tried to do. The kind of reserves kind of tried to emulate that England's attack just to try and show a similar picture that the lads will be facing on the weekend.
And we saw maybe what happened with Jamie Heaslip there last year pulling out late, and we even saw some of the pictures from that captain's run of Johnny getting the back stretch. I think it was the glute injury he had as well. Was there a couple of times that you maybe thought, geez, I actually could be in here? Like, did Joe have any kind of conversations with you that, like, just in case you might be in tomorrow or you might be in the next few hours?
Yeah, I think when you first go in on a Sunday and a Monday evening, it's a clean slate, and Joe kind of puts up his strike plays, and like you have to learn them as if you are starting on the weekend, because as you know, like there's actually been a few occasions that lads have just been put straight in there, so you need to know your stuff. So yeah, that's when you first go into camp, you need to nail off your own stuff first, make sure you've got your own make sure that you've got your own bits and bobs done, and then you have to go off and try and emulate the opposition as close as possible just to give the lads as good as tack possible so they can work on their defence. And so that's kind of the main focus of the week when I feel I go in.
So moving on to next weekend, right? There's a lovely headline in one of this weekend's papers. I think it was the Sunday Indo.
Yeah.
So, Keatley steers kids to victory. Old man Ian, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, I know. Someone else said that on to me. And it's actually my mom said it on to me. And she's like, a week before your 31st birthday. And I was like, Mom, would you stop? yeah, so I think I am becoming an old one in the group. And it wasn't long ago when I was a young guy coming up, so it's good. I think we had good conversation because we knew the back line last week. There's a lot of combinations that hadn't played together. So we kind of just tried to all get on the same page, and we tried to not complicate things, and we all just said that we're just going to work together, make sure we had our connections right. And I think it wasn't looking pretty for the first 10 minutes in that game, but we worked so hard together. We said it wasn't going to be perfect, but we got the result in the end, and against a very good Scarlets team. So it was a good win on the weekend.
Yeah, it looked as if you were on bonus point track there. Didn't quite happen.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I think if James Cronin's try had been given, I think we had pretty good momentum. And even after that wasn't given, they got the penalty. They kicked to the sideline, then they mauled us around 20 meters, and then they're pretty close to scoring, and we held them out. So if they had scored there, the game could have been completely different again. So that's rugby for you. Those momentum shifts are crucial in those games and those key decisions. Like I know Marius made a decision, and that's completely the ref's call. It's a tough place to be in. But that's why you have the TMO. The TMO should be helping them out, and maybe they're looking back at it again, going maybe it was just a reach out and a try. But listen, they've got a lot of pressure on them, and they're going to make mistakes. So you just have to get on with it. And I'm pretty proud of the way the lads just bounced back, and we still got the win.
So you referred to, the number of players out at the moment is not great. Keith Earls is now out for the next, I think, 6 weeks. Simon Zeebo, Andy Conway, 50-50 for the weekend. Chris Farrell's obviously out already. How's Rory Scannell and Tommy O'Donnell getting on now?
I think Rory's all right. I think Tommy's shoulder doesn't look good. He was in a lot of pain after the game, but he got a scan. I think he got a scan yesterday, and I haven't seen him yet. But I'm not sure if he. More than likely, probably will be out, but I'm not sure. I wouldn't like to say. But that's what you build a squad for. Like that's why you've got so many players in so many positions. Like Yakko Tauta has been out, then Chris steps in, and then Chris gets injured, and then you have Sammy Arnold, who's playing the rugby of his life. And like that's the whole thing about building a squad.
That is like a lot of those kind of young lads have kind of stepped up, haven't they? Like the likes of Sam and Jack O'Donoghue and even Stephen Fitzgerald threw a great pass there for Alex's try. It's good to kind of see some of those young lads stepping up, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because I obviously chat to the young lads and just try to give them my experience about things. And I'm just saying, like, lads, it's going to take, you'll get your chance, but it might come out of the blue, and you just need a little bit of luck, whether that's through an injury or someone not playing as good as they can be. But you just have to be ready, and that's the big thing at rugby. Your opportunities can come completely out of the blue, just like Chris Farrell in the Six Nations. Robbie Henshaw got injured, Chris Farrell steps up and gets man of the match, and all of a sudden he's more of a household name than what he was before that Welsh match. And unfortunately he got injured, but he's put himself in the radar there, and that's what the lads are starting to do on the weekend. Yes, Stevie threw a great pass. I think it might have been slightly forward, but I think he deserved that, because he's been training so hard and he hasn't got his opportunities. And Sammy as well, he's been dying for an opportunity. I know, talking to him last year, he's just climbing on the walls looking for an opportunity, and then when he got it, he just took it. And there's a few other lads like that who are still in the academy. And even Jack Stafford on the weekend, I know he didn't get long, but he's been training hard and he got his opportunity. And with injuries to Duncan Williams, if there's another injury there, like he's in a European Cup squad, so that's how opportunities come around. You just need to be ready.
Listen, before we let you go, last time we had you on, Roger was here and you were expecting your child, and he said you could expect a lot less sleep. How's fatherhood treating you?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like I think when you, even those nights where you don't get enough sleep and you kind of wake up in the morning, you're changing a nappy and you just get a big gummy smile looking back at you, you kind of forget about the night's sleep or the lack of sleep that you didn't get. So it's completely different. I've got a lot more respect for my parents now than I ever have, and just that even the help that they're still giving. But fatherhood it's unbelievable. It really has changed my life, and it's so exciting. And she's 6 months already, so it's gone quick since the last time I've been talking to you. So
it's crazy,
but it's all good, and I'm loving everyone with it.
Good stuff. Well, you can forgive them, mammies and daddies for sending you, like, you know, funny headlines as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Here, Ian, listen, we'll let you go. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Ian.
Yeah, cheers, Andy.
Yeah, Pat, old man Keatley, sounding pretty relaxed, isn't he?
Yeah, it is funny. I remember talking to Andrew Trimble before when he just after he turned 30, and he said people start trying to retire you at that stage as well. It's funny enough, isn't it? But it must have been a strange one for him in there, you know, like, because he having probably the season of his life, but then didn't get that kind of chance with Ireland, but then he's back and he has to step up because there's no time to mess around here, like there's big games coming up. So hopefully he finishes the season how he started it, because he is in great form, and you know, you easily see him, you know, included in that tour to Australia as well this summer.
Yeah, so no Toulon 49-0 against Claremont the weekend, just as a little warm up.
It's the 49-0. I see Chris Ashton's got 21 tries for the season as well in France.
Equal the record.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah. So they rested Nanu. They said, okay, we'll play Fekitoa instead.
And he got a couple, I think, as well, yeah.
No, it's savage. Clermont are in trouble they're playing a quarter final against Racing. That's not a great warm up for them. Mm. But Toulon travelling to Thomond is no easy task.
No. No, it's going to be very tough for them. And I know, yeah, Munster have a lot of injuries. You know, they'll be looking to patch a few guys up, and there might be guys not playing at 100%, but they'll probably need, as Ian mentioned, some of those young guys to actually step up, or a few of them might just be on the bench or something like that, and they'll be needed in the last 15-20 minutes. This will be a very, very tight one, I'd say. Now, it's a shame Earls is gone now as well.
And the lads from Dubai, yeah, make them back in fast.
Get the lads back. Yeah, I saw that. There was a funny one. I think Rory Best even put up a message saying thanks for the trip over.
Yeah.
And James Haskell sent him a message back saying, I bloody played today or something. Like, it just shows you.
I think we'll ask Jim about that, will we?
Yeah.
Yeah, last big Jim. We get him in. Right, Jim Hamilton, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Very good.
Yeah, the what have Rory Best, Conor Murray, Keith Earls, Pete O'Mahony and Rob Kearney got in common that James Haskell does not have in common? Do you know the answer to that, Jim?
Is it something to do that they're on holiday and James Haskell is as well? I don't know.
No, James Haskell is definitely not on holiday, was he, Pat?
He was back playing for Wasps, all right. Yeah, back getting himself flogged at the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not great. Anyway, Jim, are you feeling okay? Because the last word here is that you got filled in by Devin Toner.
Oh, is that the rumours down there, is it?
Yeah.
Well, the last time I remember we played against each other, we ended up on his back, so I don't know whether that was from me but carrying the ball over him, or it might have been a shot in the tackle, I can't remember. But that's just my abiding memories of me playing against Devon.
Yeah, that would be, for anyone who doesn't listen to the Rugby Pod, and if you don't, you should, that is somewhat of a running theme. So glad to bring it in.
Yeah.
Cross pod joke.
Exactly. No, it's a lot of tongue in cheek on our podcast, and I hope people don't take it too seriously. But that is a serious comment that I'm sure that I did run over when we played against each other on many occasions.
Yeah, Jim, as we were talking there actually about those Irish lads having the big blowout there, it's kind of something that the Saris were famous for. You know, they'll probably still do it, but back when you were playing as well, it's those kind of things are good to kind of let the hair down, aren't they? And just completely, you know, let rip for a few days after kind of you've all battled together so hard for a few weeks.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's a big part of life, I think, is being able to enjoy being with your friends and being with your work colleagues. And yeah, Saris would, you know, have, I don't know whether they are as big on as it now, especially with how the schedule's been this season. But in terms of, yeah, letting your head down, and we, you know, we've seen pictures on social media of the guys in Dubai, and rightly so. You know, this Irish team did an unbelievable thing in winning the Grand Slam, and you need to have that downtime. You need to be able to enjoy what you've done and enjoy your successes, and sometimes in season it is difficult. you know, but that bonding part of it, you know, it's not all about going out on the lash and getting absolutely smashed, but it's about spending time, I suppose, without wearing your rugby boots and wearing a pair of flip-flops and, you know, enjoying a little bit of sun. And there is a massive part about team bonding, and at Saracens, when I was there, we were massive on that, because ultimately when you're in that relaxed environment, you know, maybe if you've had a drink or if you've had 10 or 15, then you're a lot more comfortable to be able to speak to each other, and maybe someone that you haven't spoke to, maybe, you know, if you're in the front row the whole time and there's a guy at fullback playing and you never get to see in a game, it might be time for you to, you know, to connect, and that relationship that you make off the field might become important one day on the field in a critical moment. So it's great to see the Irish guys enjoying it, rightly so. They won the Grand Slam, and slightly different for the Premiership guys. There are a couple of guys that have been away, like Mako Gunapola's been away on holiday this week, but the majority of the English team are back with their clubs this week, and, you know, it is a tough ask, it's tough going on them, but ultimately, politically, or the rules or whatever you like, or the fact that the guys, the star players, are contracted by their clubs, is that they're owned by the teams and they're owned by the franchises, and ultimately there's a lot to play for in the Premiership top six. You know, we still saw that with Harlequin trying to get in there at the weekend, and ultimately top four, the backbone of that England team who play at Saracens, and a couple of the Wasps guys, etc., trying to get into that top four and top two.
So yeah, that's something that I think Mauro Tojo was having a little poke at the weekend with his try celebration, Jim. hell of a try for a tired man.
Exactly, yeah, it was a hell of a try. But look, it's, you know, now I'm on the other side of the fence, and you have to be more judgmental, and you look at rugby in a different way, that it is easy to judge, and ultimately that's what we do as pundits, that's what we do in the media, and that's what we do as fans. Like, you look at it on face value, you know, has Mauro Tojo been at the levels that he was last year and for the British Lions? No, he hasn't. Does he look tired? Well, he's either tired or he's not been playing it to his level, so people use the tiredness as an excuse, and it's quite easily to do that, but you can also see why. You know, you only have to look at the numbers of games that he's played compared to opposite numbers, for example, and, you know, I'm not going to start throwing stats around, but the one that we know that, you know, Farrell played double, three times the amount of minutes than Sexton has leading up to that game at Twickenham. So I believe, in looking at it, that the guys are tired. I think at the weekend, you know, Mauro's got that quality and he's got that power against a lesser opposition. You know, there wasn't Ireland or France who were playing. They were playing Harlequins, who were an okay team. But I think for him personally, you know, to be able to score a try which looked more like the Mauro Tojo that we associate him with was nice. And I quite like the fact that, you know, that he's showing a little bit of character and stuff like that, because he is a big name in the world of rugby now. But, you know, is Mauro Tojo tired? Well, potentially. I suppose we'll see in the running. I suppose we'll see come this weekend and become the business end of the season for Saracens. But he's a quality player that I've got a lot of respect for. He's a young lad. He's had a lot to deal with. And it was great to see him back on form at the weekend against Harlequins.
Yeah, there's a lot of people looking forward to this game now this weekend. When the quarterfinal draw became set, Leinster versus Saracens jumped off for everybody. And it's just taken a while to get here. When the draw was originally made, you know, Saracens weren't looking great. They scraped in. Leinster had blitzed their pool. Are we perhaps more of an equal footing now? There's been a Six Nations in between.
Oh, definitely. I think if you look at it on face value, and you look at it on form, Leinster are firm favourites. And you don't say that lightly, because obviously Saracens, we won the Champions Cup back to back last year in Edinburgh, the year before in Lyon against Racing Metro. And you look at it, though, like you said, Leinster have absolutely blitzed the Pro 14. They've blitzed their pool, and Ireland have blitzed the Six Nations. So you look at it in terms of, oh, I should mention as well that the game's also in Dublin. So in terms of that, it looks prime for Leinster. But, you know, what you can't forget is the Saracens, and I put we in this bracket because I was obviously involved for the last three seasons, where it was that there were tough times in that. You know, we went through blitz where we lost three or four in the bounce. I think the worrying thing for me for Saracens this year was that game against Clermont at home, where Saracens just got absolutely destroyed in all facets of the game. And yes, they bounced back the week after in Clermont, but still lost that game. But yeah, their form hasn't been great. You know, they've limped through, obviously, to these stages. It was all taken out of Saracens' hands, which I don't know when the last time that happened to a team that won the Champions Cup final. But Saracens when Saracens play well and when they put a Saracens performance, they can beat anyone on their day, and we've seen that. And that's what Leinster will understand, and that's what they'll know. And you've also got to remember that the backbone of the Saracens teams, in terms of Maka Vunipola, Jamie George, Itoje, Cruz, you put Wigglesworth now in that, because he played in that Ireland game, but Farrell being the main person who there's question marks over whether he's going to be fit or not. I imagine he will be, but if he's not, then that's a big loss. But the backbone of that Saracens team are going to be hurting from that game in Dublin, watching, you know, you saw the players watching Ireland win that Grand Slam and beating England at Twickenham that everyone thought was going to be the Grand Slam decider, and they would have felt embarrassed. So I'm sure from that day, from that England-Ireland game, a lot of them players would have been watching what Ireland did, and they'll be looking for payback, and there's no bigger opportunity or bigger stage for these superstar players at Saracens to make a statement than in the quarter-final against Leinster, who are the form team in the Championship, and you couldn't put it past Saracens winning. I mean, it's like you said, when the draw came out, you were rubbing your hands, because I can't remember another quarter-final that's going to be as big as this in recent years. So game of the weekend, certainly. And for me, I think the team that wins are going to be favourites to go on and win the Champions Cup.
Yeah, it was quite the reward for Leinster, blitzing the pool and getting Saracens.
Can you imagine, Leo, they're looking at it like, right, quarter-final, who are going to get you? Well, you've worked this hard, you've done that well, you're going to get Saracens.
Yeah, easy, soft 8 seed, no bother. Are you going to the game?
I am, actually, yeah. So I'm going out. I'm doing some stuff with Rugby Pass, who I work for, my employee, doing some media stuff out there before in the lead-up, and then doing an event with Luke Fitzgerald the night before, in both camps, which we both have. So that should be good. I'm looking forward to that. But, yeah, I'm going to the game. And, you know, now, being retired, I very rarely look forward to games. It's kind of like sometimes you just go, you'll watch them, and... but this is a game that I'm really, really looking forward to seeing, because I've got a huge amount of respect for Leinster. You know, Leo Cullen was a great mentor to me when I was at Leicester when we were young lads. He had the biggest influence on my career in terms of being able to manage a line-out and run a line-out and have that leadership part of my game that a lot of people like yourself over in Ireland might have been questioning, because leadership wasn't at the forefront of my abilities, as we saw. But... Leo was a huge influence on me, so I've got a massive respect, and I love the way that Leinster play. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to coming back over to Dublin. It's like my second home at the minute, and I'm almost welcomed with open arms.
Have you any Leo stories that stand out from the early Leinster or Leicester days? Was he a man for keeping you under his wing on a night out?
Oh, he was. Yeah, he enjoyed a quiet pint, did Leo? Yeah, he wasn't. He wasn't up to the standards of our looseness, but. Yeah, we called him the polar bear. I don't know why. I don't know why they called him the polar bear. But, yeah, he scared a few of the kids. That's all I remember. So sometimes we have to keep Leo locked up when all the kids are about, because he used to scare them just by looking at them, I think. But he had massive respect. You know, we played in the eras of Martin Johnson, Ben Kay and Lewis Deacon in our position. And I think if you ask anyone from that kind of time, that Leo was a huge influence, you know, similar to myself, not the most talented player, but what he offered in terms of leadership and culture was massive. And you can see that across the board at Leinster now, what he's brought and the, you know, the quality of coach that he's brought in with Lancaster, and just the way that quietly they go about their work, you know, their work. It might be different in Dublin, but in the, you know, not many people speak about Leinster like they do Clermont, or they speak about the Paris teams or Toulon, etc. So I think that they've gone about their work quietly, and they're primed for this game at the weekend.
And Jim, you mentioned something a little bit earlier there, saying you know, being on the other side of the fence now, is this something you've kind of experienced? Maybe you might have slagged someone or criticised someone on the pod or something like that, or on TV, and you've had, you know, a former player or teammate come up and say, what the hell are you talking about, or you got a bit of grief from somebody after saying something?
A little bit, like you do get a little bit of that. Interestingly enough, and I'm not joking, so I had a missed call off Sergio Parise last night, and it was like in the terror hour with the kids, so between kind of like, well, the terror 2 hours, between 5 and 7 when they're due to go to bed and it's bath time and it's carnage. And he's ringing me, I'm like, why is Sergio ringing me? And I was thinking, on the podcast last week, we had Castro Giovanni on the phone, and we were talking about maybe Sergio Parise being too old, maybe as a gesture, move him up to the second row just to get him through to the World Cup. And we said this on the podcast, so I'm good mates with Sergio, or so I thought. And then he's ringing me last night, so I said, no, I can't talk, I'm in terror hour. And a text, and he said, no, it's okay. He said, I didn't mean to ring you. But like, and I said, well, I didn't know whether it was about you moving up to the second row. And he just said, Jimbo, I'll play wherever. So I was worried that because we'd opened Sergio up, that he was ringing me for to give me a bit of abuse in his one of five languages that he can speak. But yeah, there sometimes is a worry when you do that. But I think that if you actually listen to it, you know, I've been in a little bit of trouble in the podcast, you know, with some comments made about Vern Cotter, and it made front page news in Scotland. And when that happened, it wasn't a case of like, great, we made the front pages in the newspaper. You know, it was a case of what was said on the podcast was written in transcript. And when you read something that's said in the podcast in the way that we do it, and there's effing and then there's blinding and, you know, there's the way that we speak, it reads very differently to how it sounds. And that's where that I've had a bit of disappointment, where you've been quoted when you're telling kind of stories that are, you know, that are blown up a little bit. It can be frustrating, but, you know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword, don't you? And we're there to enjoy what we're doing, but also make people laugh and give people an insight, and it's been quite well received, so...
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. Jim, because when you get people on, you want them to talk freely, as in a natural conversation, and we don't think about things being written down afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. Well, saying that, sorry, just before I go, so we had Jacob Stockdale on a couple of weeks ago before the Scotland game, so the Ireland-Scotland game, obviously Scotland off the back of that big win against England, and Stockdale came on, and being a 21-year-old lad, you think that you're going to get a one-word answer, he's going to be very closed book, but I was actually so surprised and really impressed with how open he was. He came on there, he said, you know, talked about his ambitions, talked about the team's ambitions, and the fact that they'd spoken about the Grand Slam, and the fact that in the lead up to that Scotland week, it's his downtime, you know, it's a 10-minute conversation like we're having now, that he was happy to come on there and speak. And I think that the modern age of rugby players, we're not seeing that, but I was really impressed with when Stockdale came on, and how candid he was about his ambitions and the team's ambitions. And hopefully, you know, we can see more of that. And you know, in you know, the UK and Ireland, we are used to kind of closed books and people being a bit little bit cagey around the media. So to have a player of his standing, obviously, you know, the tries that he scored, and I think he's one player of the Six Nations, and rightly so, to come on and speak about so openly about their ambitions is great. So
I'm sure they'll beat that out of him before long. Yeah. I'm not even joking.
Exactly.
Yeah, but no, it is great. Like, we're all in favour. Get people in, have a chat, and, you know, trust us, we're not going to, you know, completely burn you. It's part of the relationship, but, you know, people get minded as well. I get that. Right, yeah. Mr. Jim, you're in the Lep Inn. Tickets are available. All proceeds to the IRFU Charitable Trust this Friday. I've got that right, yeah?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Good man. All right, listen, good luck, Saracens, but more luck, Leinster. Talk to you soon, Jim.
No, we're looking forward to it. Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, big Jim in good form there.
Yeah, he is, wasn't he? Yeah. I was actually, I missed getting a little word in there, just asked him for Jacob Stockdale's number now, but I might send him a text afterwards and see if I can get it.
Oh, Jim says you're lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we haven't actually talked really about how we think the games will go.
Mm. Okay.
We normally nail other people on this, so it's only fair. So Munster, Toulon. Munster have played 10 quarterfinals at home, won 9.
Oh,
Ulster's the only one they didn't win.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have a little funny feeling that Toulon are going to win.
Yeah, you're right. Like, it's those injuries for Munster aren't going to help at all now, are they? Like, they just need as many experienced heads as they can get, and they might be a little bit short there. Like, and then it's even getting everybody in together. Like, it's the first run out you're going to have. Like, they might have one serious go at it, maybe, you know, early in the week before the game, but it's going to be weird, you know, different combinations coming back in. So it wouldn't be a bad one. I'll go Munster in that one, but yeah, that's and that 49-0 is kind of just a kind of slap in the face there as well, kind of getting themselves ready for this weekend.
Unreal result. Yeah. Then on Leinster's side, Leinster were not good in Wales. It was not a good result in Ospreys at all.
No, they've had a poor, like, I know the Six Nations is over, but that's probably still part of the window because you have the lads who have to get rested, you know, because they're on central contracts and stuff. But yeah, it's, you know, defeats to, wasn't Edinburgh, the Ospreys as well, like they've slipped up a little bit there, and the only thing good for them is that Scarlets were kind of slipping up as well. But to get everybody back in, there was that funny one of James Ryan and Dan Levy being in the gym the morning after the celebrations for the Six Nations, and
young lads, they disgust you
straight back at it. Yeah, they probably had as many pints as everybody else, but just can brush it off so easily. Like,
I'm saying Leinster.
Yeah,
confident.
Yeah, like, as even Jim was saying, you probably would have been more confident a few weeks back, but you always get a little bit kind of nervous when you get there. But yeah,
it is, that break is important. Like, it's a huge gap between that last round of games and this quarterfinal time.
You're almost talking, like the guts of 3 months, you know, like 2.5 months, and anything can happen, any injuries could happen, guys could get fit again. But you know, I'd be confident enough in Leinster doing the job there. I know they've slipped up, but I'd be confident.
Connacht to beat Gloucester.
Yeah, not as confident about that one. I suppose home advantage might swing it for them, and they'll have a few, you know, guys back as well.
This could be the season.
Yeah,
this is it. I mean, they've had a dreadful run in the league. Actually, we should talk about that now before we go. So, the Pro 14 Champions Cup playoff position, right? Never mind qualifying.
Yeah.
So you have to remember, everyone, we have to take cheaters out of the mix here. They cannot qualify for the Champions Cup, which is happy for a lot of people. Ulster 46 points with a game in hand, or Treviso, who are on 45 points, against Ospreys, who are currently 35 points with a game in hand, or Connacht. And Ospreys play Connacht in a couple of weeks. That's a huge game.
Yeah, that could be it. And I suppose, you know, there's a kind of, people are kind of thinking that maybe Connacht's best route into the Champions Cup might be winning the Challenge Cup.
That's it, including our very own producer, who's very firm on this point. He's like, sod the Pro 14. Come on, Challenge Cup. Burn it all.
He'll be there this weekend.
Yeah.
Fingers firmly crossed.
Nods from producer Al here. But they'd be away in the semis if either way. So if they, like, take care of business, that's all you can do. Play Gloucester at home, beat them. I think they've got it in them.
Yeah,
that's gut feeling only. I think they've got it in them, and the semi-final is going to be the season defining game.
Yeah, and a couple of good signings they've announced recently as well. Like, so, but they need to finish on a high then to kind of, you know, make that count next season.
They do. Okay, we will leave it there. Ulster, we're not talking about you yet.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll be chatting next with All Blacks legend Conrad Smith.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
Welcome back to The Hard Yards. Next, I have somebody with 8 Tri Nations / Rugby Championship titles, 2 World Cups, Lions Test Series win in 2005, most capped Canes player of all time, along with Man Anu. Conrad Smith, hello.
Thank you for the introduction. Yeah, hello.
You're welcome. Well, you know, I'm going to call you a great, and I'm happy about that.
I've been playing a long time.
So you're over in Po now. Am I pronouncing that correctly, by the way? I always look at it and go Po. It is Po.
Yeah, Po.
That's good. Because I've got a lot of slaggins for my French pronunciation at times. What's it like? You've got a few Irish lads over there.
We do. Simon Mannix is the head coach here, and he came from a stint at Munster, so he sort of brought a few within the management, and 4 or 5 of the players. So we've kept a pretty nice Irish flavour to the team, as well as a few Kiwis that, like myself and a few others, that Simon has convinced to come over. And it's been good.
Have you enjoyed the French experience?
Yeah, I've loved it. To be honest, you know, I moved with my wife and for the, you know, just to live here, to live in Europe. It was something we always wanted to do. But the rugby's, you know, sort of exceeded expectations of anything. And, you know, I've ended up playing probably a season longer than I ever thought I would. And, really enjoying the club and even the rugby itself. So, yeah, it's been a nice little 2.5 years that we've had here.
Yeah, Conrad, you were saying there that Simon kind of convinced you over. Did you ever have an Irish province kind of be interested in maybe tempting you over here to Ireland to play for a season or two?
To be honest, you know, like I'm not sort of the person to, you know, shop around. I never looked overseas while I was playing in New Zealand, and then, you know, when I knew I was sort of going to finish with the All Blacks, I'd sort of knew my time was up in New Zealand. I didn't want to play anymore, and like I said before, I just wanted to live in France. I sort of asked the agent if there was anyone, you know, with a New Zealand coach, because I wanted to trust someone that, you know, I could go over and not be expected to play every game, and sort of learn the language and sort of do a little bit of coaching maybe. And, you know, he came. I didn't even realise Simon was working over there. And then once that came up, you know, I didn't look any further. It wasn't about trying to find an extra dollar or anything. It was that was what we wanted to do. It wasn't about anything else. So I never sort of gave anyone the chance to offer, and you know, so that's how it all worked out.
Yeah, it's pretty good. If you're Conrad Smith, you say to the agent, "I want to play in France." He goes, "I can make that happen."
To be honest, I didn't think I gave him the, you know, conditions that I thought he'd never. I said I wanted a small place. I didn't want to live in a big city, and or France or Italy. I said, you know, I wanted to speak. My wife is the same. We wanted to learn a language, and I wanted a coach that at least I knew, like preferably a New Zealander. And he came back within a week with a club. So I actually thought I wasn't going to find anywhere, and I'd just have to move over and pick apples.
So, you mean, the rugby has gone pretty well. Power moving up the scene a bit. Are you, like, you're happy with your playing? Or you think you're playing the right amount? Are you doing a bit of coaching as well to help him along?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing a little, nothing formal. You know, we've talked about that, and I was happy just to keep playing. You know, they look after me pretty well, and, you know, to be honest, I'm playing, you know, I'd say the same standard I was back in New Zealand. I've stayed healthy. I've sort of had one little injury layoff last year, you know, which I suppose you expect every few years with rugby. But, other than that, I've looked after myself well and played some good footy. And, you know, it's hard calling an end to it because, you know, next year I'd probably back myself if I wanted to do the same. You know, the body's in good nick, but I don't know. I find it's you got to call it quits at some stage, and I have done a little bit of coaching with them already, and I'm keen to do a little bit more next year without the playing side. So, you know, that's the plan, and hopefully it works out.
And will that be in France, or are you going to move home?
Yeah, no. Yeah, so I'll stay where we are. You know, like I say, the club's been really good. I think it's got a bright future. You know, there's the structure of the club here. You know, in France, it differs a lot between each club, but I think they've got a really good setup here. And I'd like to stay here a while. The family loves living in France. We've got a couple of kids, and they're enjoying the school, and we enjoy seeing them speaking two languages better than we can. So, it's a good experience. So we don't want it to end just because I finished playing.
So you talked about, you know, moving into doing some coaching, but you're also a qualified lawyer, correct?
Correct. Many moons ago, but yeah, back in New Zealand, that was my first gig before rugby took over.
And is that something you're going to pursue?
Yeah, I've you know, it's not something that's easy to get straight back into, but I'd love to, you know, use something with the both of them. I don't want to completely forget, you know, I've studied for a long time, and I still sort of have an interest in it. And that's where, you know, some of the opportunities around the Players Association have cropped up. I did a little bit of work, quite a bit back in, you know, I was in New Zealand, and since being over here, I've done a little for the international players, and that's something I'm, you know, looking to carry on as well.
Yeah, so the International Players Association, they've moved from Auckland, their headquarters now, to Dublin. So will we see you over here with a nice pinstripe suit on, will we?
Possibly, although my last attempt to get over to Dublin from Poe, it's not straightforward, and it took me about 3 days of travel for about 3 hours on the ground in Dublin. not helped by French airstrikes and things like that. So, you know, it's definitely something that may happen a bit more often, you know, with the base here in Dublin and, and living here in Poe, you know, I'll get up there a little bit, but the wonders of modern technology, I can sort of work, do most of it from where I am.
And Conrad, I was just looking back at just, I think, 94 caps for the All Blacks. We played Ireland a good few times and played in Croke Park in 2008. I was wondering, is there any kind of memories to stand out from kind of playing the Irish and a couple of maybe the toughest player you ever came across?
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, you know, I played Brian O'Driscoll most of those games. Yeah. And, you know, he was, you know, when I started, he was someone I looked up to and someone I've, you know, had a lot of respect for even when I was playing him. And, you know, and then when you mention, you know, Croke Park, that was probably a highlight. And to be honest, yeah, all the games against the Irish were pretty special. We didn't tend to play them as much as, say, the Welsh and the English. We seemed to play them in every India tour. The Irish, not so much. So, and I think that helps because they were always pretty special and, obviously, you know, they had quality teams and a quality battle every time we ran out against them. So, yeah, it's a lot of fond memories of those games.
Here, how has centre play changed over the years, Conrad? Because, like, we see a different shape of centre coming into the game now. You've been around a while.
Yeah, I don't know if... I just think it's one of those positions that, you know, there's no set way. I think you're more... I think you need a balance in your back line and you can find that balance in different ways. And maybe for a while, people were, you know, coaches or whoever were selecting a lot of strong ball carriers in those positions and then just expecting the 9-10 to sort of do all the distribution and the, you know, the tactics. And then, you know, maybe that's changed and now you see nines that are running a lot more and even tens that, you know, are required to take on the line. And so then you can have a midfielder or both that can distribute. I don't think, and that's what I love about rugby, you know, you can say this about every position. There's no set way you sort of, and for me coming when I was playing younger against a lot of bigger guys, I knew I couldn't play that sort of game, so I just stuck to doing things a little bit differently. And if you're good enough, then a team will accommodate for you. And I think that's what we're seeing with rugby. It's just constantly evolving, and there's no set way now. You know, in a few years' time, they'll be looking for different attributes to each position.
So where did the snakey nickname come from?
I don't know where. It was a cricket coach that gave it to me, to be honest, and... Everyone has their own opinions, which aren't very flattering. I tell you, when I first met my wife, it wasn't a nickname that I wanted to bandy about. It was, to be honest, it was a cricket coach who I showed a lot of energy in the field and was stopping the ball a lot, and he called me looked like a snake in the outfield. So, but yeah, it's stuck ever since.
Nice one.
Here, Conrad, I was going to ask you there, what is it, like you played so many games with Nonu, like that'd be the famous partnership, and I think it was a great picture of you guys. You were in the Pau jersey, he was in the Toulon jersey, I think earlier this season, but what was it kind of like playing alongside someone like him? Was it almost a kind of, you don't even have to say words to each other, you just know each other's game so well?
Yeah, and I think, you know, getting asked about that a lot, and it was something, it did develop, you know, it was, we started out, you know, probably in competition for the same spot, and you know, we had Tana with us in the Hurricane side, so you know, I think he ended up on the wing, which he was never happy about, and you know, and we just had a lot of time together, and I suppose it wasn't until we were starting regularly with the All Blacks that sort of the coaches talked to us about building the relationship and, you know, giving a bit more thought to it and a bit more chat off the field. And you know, once we did that, I think that's when we started, you know, helping each other's games a lot more. And I suppose with the years, both with the Hurricanes and the All Blacks, then it sort of got to the point where you were talking about, where we just knew each other so well that we could pick up signs, and even, you know, if we were struggling or when we're doing well, and what the other one needed from each other. And that's what, you know, I think towards the end, that's where it got to. And it was something we were working on right till the end, and you know, I think it helped us, but it took a lot of work.
And did you, was it, I don't know if you saw, you were watching much of the Six Nations, but I suppose what you make of Ireland and the guys who kind of were playing at centre for them, someone like Ringrose stepping up in the last couple of games.
Yeah, and he was, you know, someone I was really impressed with. And but yeah, there's a lot of midfielders. I'm going to forget the young Scottish boy as well that was pretty impressive. And obviously seeing Bundy Aki playing, guy I played a couple of times in New Zealand before he went over. It's you know, it's cool. I was impressed with the standard of play, you know, from all the teams, but particularly Ireland. They're you know, they did simple things really well, and you know, that's all you need to do to win rugby games. And you know, they're doing it really well. And like I say, it was good to watch.
So think way back to when you were playing with Bundy. Is it the same player now that you're seeing playing for Ireland, winning a Grand Slam?
I mean, there's the same sort of things that he did really well. Great, you know, with ball into contact, getting arms free to offload, and you know. But he's obviously developed as everyone does. You know, he's played a lot. He's developed things to his game. And but you know, when he was in New Zealand, he was highly regarded. He's not a player. I think, you know, you talk about some that weren't picked, and they, so they, like Hadley Parks, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, he was struggling to get a super team, and but you know, you see how good he's gone since he's gone to Wales. But Bundy was someone highly regarded, but you know, he made his decision to leave, and yeah, it's worked out well for him as well.
I saw he actually was teaching some of the Irish guys a little haka at the end of that game in Twickenham.
good on him.
Yeah, right, Conrad Smith, thank you very much for joining us on the Hard Yards.
No problem.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
You're welcome back to the Hard Yards. We're going to take a look at some of your questions that you've sent in on social media. Remember to follow us on Twitter at @thyrugby and use the hashtag #AskThy if you want to get in a question for next week. Okay, first one from Jarlath. This is good. What do you think of Jeremy Guscott's assertion that Ireland have no world-class players? He did qualify this, but it was mad.
Is his qualification that they wouldn't get into a World 15? Is that
they had to be the number one choice, as in without any debate whatsoever. Sorry, I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, yeah.
At all. So Aaron Smith exists.
Yeah.
Therefore, Conor Murray is not world class. That's the logic.
Yeah.
No.
No.
No, no, no.
Twisted logic, isn't it? Like, that's like, if there's any, I think most people would agree, though, that like Conor Murray would be better than Aaron Smith as well, or he would edge him. Or
even if you don't,
yeah.
I mean, if you're picking a 23, right, to take on any team in the world right now, and you have unlimited funds and a magic wand, it's Conor Murray and Aaron Smith as your two halfbacks.
Yeah,
done.
Yeah. Tadhg Furlong, you know, like, yeah, there's
exactly.
A few. Like, there's
Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny. When he's fit again, Sean O'Brien, I think, is a world class player as well. Like, and
hold on, we've anointed Dan Levy.
Oh, it's too late. Levy, get ahead of him. Well, yeah, listen, let's start Levy then and have Sean O'Brien on the bench.
Yeah, I disagree with the assertion, even with the qualification. That'll be my position.
Yeah, there was one, I think I was maybe like a lot of other people last week, I was just listening to as much, you know, any rugby pod that was out there to kind of keep up the buzz of the Grand Slam as well. And I was listening to the Mirrors one, the Mall, and one of their guys was saying Ireland aren't a world-class team as well. And you're like, well, what are you talking about here?
Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, like, how can you not be a world-class team? Like, you've beaten the world champions. Like, you know, you've went away to South Africa. You've won there as well. You've beaten all the Southern Hemisphere teams.
So the one that usually gets rolled out, right, is that they won in Chicago when the All Blacks were on a jolly and it's a quote-unquote exhibition game.
Yeah.
Fine. Okay. They've still gone to Twickenham. They've won the Grand Slam. They've played brilliantly. As in, they cruised through a Grand Slam winning game.
Yeah.
I mean, that second half, someone came up to me in the week and said, God, it was really disappointing. I was like, what do you mean? He said, the second half was just like, I mean, it was done. I was going, yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Get used to this. This is how New Zealand feel all the time.
Mm.
You know, and second in the world.
Yeah.
Second in the world on merit. It's not a trick of the rankings. Ireland are playing that well. Yeah, not world class.
I know, stupid stuff. Like.
But let's be world class and properly at the pointy end of things in Japan in 2019.
Yes, right? That is a big one.
Yeah, okay. which non-capped or low-capped players will Schmidt bring with him to Australia? Also, which coaches like Rog and Felix Jones, etc., summer? That's from Niall Coleman. Good question. Mm. So, if we're saying that, do you reckon you leave any at home? I think you'll leave a couple at home.
Yeah, like I did. As much as we praised Rob Kearney, I actually did a bit where I kind of just, you know, like picked a team, like just a good team to play Australia. And I think I put all the other senior guys in, but I left, gave Kearney a rest. Yeah.
To drop him again.
And then I got grief for it. But I was saying, like, I don't know, great player as well, but maybe he's someone that you could rest up and give someone like Jordan Larmour a go out there, or someone Conway, who have constantly been plugging all season, even though he's been injured. But someone like him, maybe Rory Best as well, like, because he is getting on that little bit. And this is a big chance then to give some of the hookers go. But I definitely can see Murray and Sexton travelling to Australia, and because they want to win that series as well, as Kev spoke about there last week. Bring in new players, but win the series too. And but that's a good one. Yeah, young guys. I was thinking of the likes of maybe like Alex Wootton, who scored at the weekend. Mm.
Sammy Ireland is in line for a start. I mean, he's been brought into camp. There's obviously something about him. I mean, again, he moved down from Ulster to get the time that he's now getting. I mean, Keatley referred to him earlier on. Like, he's playing brilliantly.
Yeah,
he really is. He's a lovely all round player. I could definitely see him getting a test start.
Bringing him to travel as well. The Burns, like Ed Byrne and Brian Byrne, are always getting talked up by the Leinster lads as well. Like, Jack O'Donoghue, I know he's been capped a couple of times as well, but lovely clear out at the weekend for Copeland's trial. Like, and someone who could come in and do a job, and they trust him as well. So, can see a few new faces. I wonder, in the big talk again, does someone like Ian Keatley travel, or did I go and give someone like, you know, a Ross Byrne a go or something like that? So maybe if Byrne steps up in these Champions Cup games and takes his chance, or he has a chance. But and then the coaching thing, maybe like, does anybody new come in, or Felix Jones travel again? Like, I could see that happening again. Like,
does the audition continue for the 2019 backroom team?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Roger's only over the water down there.
Oh yeah. You could just pop over,
just nip over. Commute.
Keep the phone on.
Here's a good one. James McCluggage, would the best move for JJ Hanrahan be a move to Ulster? Would be a decent signing for both player and club. So there's a player now who we didn't mention with the summer tour. Like, he's not in the mix.
Yeah.
And if you go back a few years, that would seem completely bonkers.
Yeah.
Such a talent.
I know, like, and I think he's nominated for under 20 player of the year, I think, in that tournament when he did so well for Ireland. And just again, we're talking about teammates talking guys up. Like, teammates love Hanrahan. Like, they think he's a great player, and suffered from going over to, I think when he went over to Northampton, he was kept behind Stephen Myler then and couldn't get ahead of him. I think Myler's now leaving Northampton this summer as well. But I don't think it's time for him to move again. As much as Ulster could do with him. You know, stick around there, and I still think that out half is the best position for him. Like,
there's a lot depending on Tyler Blaendahl is having his injury troubles again.
If he
comes back properly, then JJ's in a long queue down at Munster. If he doesn't come back, and don't get me wrong, that's not something I want, then JJ's in a much shorter queue to get just time at 10. But like, man, that you could stick that guy anywhere in a back line and he'd be good.
Yeah, so he'll still bring out these like moments of magic. Like, you know, you even see it, like, you know, you just see, if he keeps playing, like, he'd produce two or three great moments in every game, and maybe it's a shoring up another side of his game, like, that he has to kind of look after as well, or the tactical kick in as well. But as you said, game time will be the biggest thing for me. You'll see now, even maybe with someone like James Hart, is getting a bit more of a run now that Duncan Williams is injured, and he's scored at the weekend. So if these boys can get a chance of the next few months, it could do wonders for him. We could be talking him up again soon enough.
Okay, last one. Mirren Foynes, what positives, if any, can Connacht take from this season so far?
This season, they beat Munster earlier on the season over in Galway. That was a good result. Quinn Roo is now a Grand Slam champion.
That's okay. Yeah.
They've signed contract extensions like the Ronaldson and Keane Kelleher and stuff like that, and they've brought in, I think, an Australian out half for next season as well, a centre as well. So as you said, hopefully they just can finish, and just if they can somehow get into that Champions Cup for next season, or go far in the Challenge Cup, like, it might help. But they're just dropping a lot of, like, that,
they're dropping a lot of games.
That was disaster against Edinburgh at the weekend. That kind of Duncan Weir blocked down and score as well. And
credit to Edinburgh though. They've won in the last month and a half. They've beaten all four Ireland's provinces. That's savage. Well done, Cockers.
Yeah, he's doing good.
He is. Right. Yeah, I think that is it for this week. Make sure to use the hashtag AskTHY if you want to get a question in for next week. Thanks to Pat, Ian, Jim and Conrad, to Alan Nacknan for producing, and Shane Dempsey was on sound. We'll be back next Monday with a new show. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app, including Spotify now, to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for listening and we'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.